The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air.
Mānawa mai e a te kāhui o Matariki, mānawa mai e a te whetū tapu o te tau. Kia ora, nau mai ki tēnei kōna ipurangi ki a Nē. Ko te kuru o te marama diūs tēnei o Ngāti Porou o Ngāti Rangitihi, e tangi atu nei ki o tātou mate, e mihi atu nei ki a koutou kuatū hono maira. Welcome to Nē. My name is Te Kuru Diūs, I'm in the driver's seat today for this Matariki special. Today it's my pleasure to host artist Nico Hinden of Ngai Tūpoto, Te Rarawa e Ngāpuhi. Nico is a maker of ote who works with natural earth pigments. He mahi tukui ho te ote. It was a practice brought here by our tipuna who, using their vast knowledge of celestial navigation, sailed Te Moana Nui Akiwa from Hawaiki and eventually made Aotearoa their home, although at some point the practice of ote was discontinued. Nico has spent the past decade dedicated to remembering and reinvigorating the practice of ote in Aotearoa. It revolves around the life cycle of the plant, from growing and harvesting to processing the inner bark and creating a fine cloth. Nico has taken on the responsibility of holding wānanga and teaching this knowledge to a new generation of makers. She works intimately with plants and tools that also come from the natural environment, and aligns her practices with the maramataka, the Māori stellar lunar calendar. Her pieces are born from Māori conceptions of time and space. Her star maps record the rising and setting of stars like Matariki, Puanga and Rehua on the horizon and come from the navigational system of the star compass. She uses her maps as mnemonics to record the movement of stars in relation to the stellar lunar calendar and tracks their seasonal changes. One big change coming up for us in Aotearoa, which is not far from happening, a significant historical moment as we rotate towards the acknowledgement of Matariki and what will be the first Indigenous public holiday in the world. An official hautapu ceremony facilitated by the Minister for Crown Relations in conjunction with Te Papa and attended by the Prime Minister and Dr. Rangi Mātāmua, Chair of the Matariki Advisory Group, who are behind this big push to see our traditions around Matariki and Māori astronomy recognised by the Crown for the benefit of all New Zealanders. Nico will be on a panel of artists that morning of the hautapu ceremony, which will be broadcast live, where the artists, including Maisie Rika, Irana Kōpū and Tyrone Ōhia, will discuss how they incorporate Matariki into their mahi. After the break, I'll be joined by our manuhiri and my two co-hosts, Nga Reira, e hoama, kia mau tonu atura. Nau mai anō, ko piri nei ōku hoa mahi, a rā ko Leonie Hayden, rāwa ko Mariana Johnson, tēnā kōrua.
Kia ora, kia ora.
E nā koe hoa.
And we extend our mihi to our manuhiri, Nico Hinden. Nico, my darling, tēnā koe, welcome to the party.
Tēnā koutou.
Kia ora hoa.
Nā kai kōrero o Nē, o tira tēnā tātou, e hui hui mai nei ki te whakarongo ki tēnei kōna ipurangi.
Mai, haere mai.
Ai. Piwari, tino piwari kōrua.
We'll try and stay on course.
Ai.
Tell us, Nico, maramataka, stellar lunar calendar, how does that relate to your own mahi?
Well, I think actually it doesn't just relate to my mahi, it relates to all of our mahi and the way that we, the way that we interact with our natural environment every day. But I think I became interested in the stellar lunar calendar after reading Rangi Mātāmua's book, Matariki, and realizing that Matariki is just one of the significant morning stars that we use to kind of track time and that there are so many other stars to learn about that are associated with every new month or new moon cycle. So I make these star maps and use my star maps to document when the stars rise, when these morning stars rise, and where they are on the horizon, and kind of just adding to my kite of knowledge, which originally came from learning about the star compass. So, yes.
And where did that take place? Where did you learn about star compass?
I learned about the star compass when I was in Hawaii, and I was lucky enough to be surrounded by the apprentice navigators on the Waka Hokulea. And so just by hanging around with them, with those apprentice navigators, and watching them study for their long voyages to Tahiti, I kind of just absorbed all the different stars and the stories that they have and where they rise on the horizon and how they use our whetū to find direction. And that's how, just by watching them study using stellarium, and they make kind of like graphs to help them remember the stars, and depending on what time of the year they're going on their voyage, you know, they'll record those specific stars. And so that's how I came up with my star map system. And then coming back to Aotearoa, I had to learn all of our Māori names for the stars, and which was really awesome. Then through teachers like Rangi Mātāmua, I realised that I used to call them, you know, we have our voyaging stars, our navigation stars, and then we have our land stars, which are the stars associated with the Maramataka. But then I realised that our star knowledge probably came originally from our Maramataka knowledge and our awareness of just where the stars were and where they were going to rise on the horizon at different times of the year. So, you know, we think that the Maramataka is just about the moon, but it's so much more. It's actually just about everything. And it's actually just about telling the time, and knowing what time it is helps you like locate yourself in time and space. And because we use the Gregorian calendar system, you know, and colonization has taken away our own ability to tell time in a Māori way. And I think that that's like the most powerful thing is having that connection to time and space. And if you take that away from a people, then you're taking away their connection with the environment, with the taiao, with the whenua, but also with the stars. And that's the most important thing to me is just being able to reclaim that mātauranga, because I don't think that it's something that was just for like our tohunga. I think that, you know, everyone knew what day it was, you know, like this was mātauranga for the common person. What was happening and what moon phase it was just like just everyday knowledge.
It's a method of survival, yeah?
Yeah.
You know what to eat because you have to eat.
Exactly.
I'm really curious. I mean, a tāhua tō mahi tō'i, but it's not just beautiful mahi toi, it's a map, yeah?
Mm.
So, I mean, we're not using a visual medium right now. This is a podcast. Engari, are you able to explain to us how a star map works?
Yeah, so basically it's just a two-dimensional version of our star compass. And the star compass comes from the idea of you're on your waka in the middle of the ocean. You can't see any land, and there's a horizon 360 degrees around you. So it's a three-dimensional framework, and that horizon is divided into 32 star houses, and every star house is 11.25 degrees. Within those star houses, there's north, south, east, and west, and then there's seven star houses between those. And ko te whakaaro is that stars live in those houses, and then they rise from the east, those eastern houses, and then they set and they go back to the same house in the opposite horizon on the west side. And so if you memorize where those different stars rise and set, then when you see those stars on the horizon, like Tauporu, Orion's belt rises exactly due east. So if you see Tautoru low on the horizon, like we will in the morning of Matariki, we can be pretty sure that that's east. And then same for if we see it in the western horizon, close to the horizon. So basically my star map is like a two-dimensional representation of that 3D model, and I do Niho Taniwha at the base of my star maps to represent the different star houses, and then I have a line that represents the horizon, and then I have vertical lines, and each vertical line represents a star and exactly where they rise on the horizon, and they have different, like for example, Matariki has 9 Niho on it because it's got 9 Fetu. And then Tautoru has 3 because it's got 3, well, you know, kind of 3 Fetu.
Where do you conceptualize yourself when you're at the beginning of a project? You talked about locating yourself within time and space. Do you imagine that you're out on a waka in the middle of the Pacific Ocean? Or, you know, do you do any visualizations like that, go and stand at the beach and look at the Fetu in the morning?
I walk every morning with my kuri, and I walk along Wainui, and yeah, I locate myself where I am, which is in Te Tairawhiti, fortunately, and so I get to see a big, you know, eastern horizon, and so a lot of my work, yeah, I visualize it as being the eastern horizon with the Fetu rising up out of the horizon here.
Beautiful. I love your kōrero around time and space, and something I'm trying to decolonize myself, even just saying things like, oh, you know, feeling that tomaha because of the end of the year. Mm. And some people look at me funny, like, what, end of the year? I'm like, yeah, it's the end of the year, and I know. In what way has your work changed how you perceive time?
I think it's made me more, you know, I pay attention to, of course, which phase of the moon we're in, and I'm always looking at our paiao, so I'm looking at the ocean every day and noticing the relationship and how the ocean has changed, depending on the moon phase. And you would be surprised with how kind of consistent the ocean behaves at certain moon phases. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and do you use it in your own sort of marakai and like knowing when to plant and when?
Yeah.
You know, when's wahohake and.
Yes, especially with my mahi ote, I always try and harvest in rākaunui, so that's when the cells are the most juiciest, and so that they're the easiest to kind of process and clean when the plants are harvested in rākaunui. And then even just annually, I try and do all my harvesting and processing in the first 4 months of the year in the summertime, and then tēnei wāote or takurua, I'm inside painting because because it's, you're not really supposed to harvest the ote plant during winter because the kiri or te rākau kind of like clings to the...
Would it make it hard to strip?
Yeah, it makes it really, really tough.
Yeah.
It's telling you it doesn't want to come off.
Yeah, it's just very resistant.
A lot of people hit you up for commissions and they request dates and you put those as star maps. Is that something you do, or and what sort of dates do they ask for?
I sometimes do. I do the birth date of someone, so I can like make them a star, like when your baby was born you can figure out what their latitude, so where they were on in the horizon, and then the time of their birth, and you can I can paint them as a star. And so I did my grandmother Te Ao Karere, who I actually never got to meet, but I did her birthday as a representation of her, like a self of a portrait of her. But I also would do my brother's grandfather passed away, and so I'll do a star map for him, which will represent, you know, te wai fetu rangitia. Yeah,
I reckon you're going to get so many requests now after this.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, it's like you're not busy enough, eh?
Yeah, I don't really do commissions very often anymore.
Nice one, Tikaru.
Yeah.
You talk about Matariki as a opportunity for others, like myself and New Zealanders, as an opportunity or as a learning device, as a portal, as a gateway. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think your matariki is an amazing opportunity for us to learn more about our mātauranga Māori in astronomy and to learn about all the other stars that are in our sky and to think about or realise that what is in our sky is also reflected in the land, and that there's so many connections to what's happening with our whetū in terms of, you know, predicting the weather. You can predict a storm coming and things like that by looking at how the stars are, how much they twinkle. I think we just think that they look the same all the time, but, you know, you can just observe them and see that they don't look the same every night, and that sometimes they are, you know, going off a bit more, or they're a bit brighter, or they're not as bright, and that, yeah, Matariki is a significant cluster for us, but there's also, you know, like there's Pipiri. Pipiri is the first month of our Māori lunar year, and Pipiri is actually a star, the star Hamal, and then Takuru is the second month of the year, and that star is Sirius. And so these, you know, our tupuna would observe, would wake up 4:30 probably, or like super early in the morning, and observe the rising of these different morning stars, and that would be how they would, you know, take a reading, or, you know, be like, oh, this is the time that we're in now by using the stars. And there's lots of other stars, not just Matariki, that we used to tell time.
Which star rising or appearing was used to signal the start of like the harvest?
He aro matawai.
He uu te pātai. I'm doing an assignment, and I was like, I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I mean, I think that depends on, well, because...
On where you are, near.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I know that Uncle Tom down in Kahunganu, he plants his kumara the first full moon after Labour weekend, all the stuff, and he like lines them up with the maunga and the awa and the stars, the pattern that he plants. And yeah, and so I do think it is specific to your location. I mean, everything, that's what we're learning definitely, is that yeah, like I was up north a couple of weeks ago, and your whole what you see is so different being on the west coast and having the, you know, the Hokianga right there, and then the mountain ranges, so you can't, the eastern horizon is obscured, so that's why they use puanga instead of matariki, and everything's just local.
Yeah.
But as my dad always says to me now, is that everything's changing so quickly, the weather is becoming much more erratic and difficult to predict, so yeah, it's a bit of a funny time, I think, for, you know, we're getting back into learning about these systems, which are kind of almost like no longer systems, because they're no longer consistent because of climate change. So if we had, you know, and sometimes there are people who have maintained that knowledge or observed these changes, but it would be a lot easier to track the kind of decline in biodiversity if we knew all of the patterns.
Mm. Imagine if everyone was paying attention.
If our knowledge transmission wasn't disrupted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Are you excited for your kōrero for the panel next week?
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous. It'll be a beautiful hautapu. It'll be really awesome to wake up at 4:30 in the morning and
you can't wait.
Yeah, be in Pōneke and
sunny Wellington.
Yeah, I think it will be really cool and really special to observe the way that, you know, tikanga occurs through in this hautapu process. Will be really interesting to hear all the karakia and to hopefully smell the kai, see the steam rising up.
For our listeners that don't and might not know what a hautapu is, do you want to just explain to us what that ceremony is?
I'm not probably the best person to explain, but it is celebration of matariki by offering kai to matariki. And the way I visualize it is the steam going up and matariki receiving those fruits of the harvest. And that's why you have all the different kai. You know, you have the tuna and the kumara, and you also have ika and kereru. We probably won't have kereru.
Yeah, I was like, oh, where are we getting the kereru from?
You might have a hei-hei.
Yeah, we used to have hei-hei at our kura. We used to do smoked fish and smoked eel and hei-hei and kumara, and those were our kai that we made offerings with.
And they all connect back to different whetū, right? So like Te Puanuku is your kumara. Waiti, I hope I'm not going to mess this up, Waita's salte, right. So that's where you get it, ika, yeah, and waiti is something like tuna.
Tuna, aye.
And what does heihei connect back to?
Te Puarangi.
Supposedly Te Puarangi, but they don't really fly, do they?
So. Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't really make sense. Right.
They don't really occupy the trees either. So
we're just substituting for now until we get our populations back up.
I've seen a chicken in a tree before.
Titi would be great. Yeah. I'm sure the Atua would like that.
Good. Totally.
What are some of the basics, I think, before we start to wrap up? What are some basics for people that you can give today? People like me who, you know, as hard as we might try, some of it just doesn't stick.
Yeah, I think the best thing to remember is that stars like the sun rise in the east and set in the west, that we have to remember about where we are on the globe, and we're very low. Our latitude is quite low, so that means that we see, you know, Mahutonga and Atutahi, which is the Southern Cross in Canopus, and they're circumpolar, so they never set. They go in a circle, and we can see the South Celestial Pole, which is the celestial version of the South Pole. And just, I think, you know, when you watch Rehua rise and Te Matawa Māui rises, like, on its back, the fish hook rises on its back, but the way that it will set will be different. So that, yeah, our stars, they rise in a certain way, but because of where we are located, they kind of move around, and the Milky Way kind of all moves around us in a really interesting way. And so I think if you notice, you know, even in the summertime, which is usually the time where we're outside and looking at the stars, you'll be able to see matariki at that time, and just to take note and be like, oh, look, there's matariki. And we can see matariki in the summertime, but we can't see matariki sort of in autumn around May, even April in Te Tairawhiti. We can't really see matariki because it's already set. And so just to be aware that the stars are always moving around us, and try and work out where they are at, like when you see them and what time of the year that is. And then you can kind of put together a picture. And I guess another good basic one is that matariki and rehua are always opposite each other. So the cluster of matariki, and so if they're rising on the eastern horizon, then on the western horizon, rehua, and so the Te Matawa Māui is setting because they're kind of opposite to each other.
Did you get all that, Mariana?
Basics.
I actually was taking notes.
Good thing is we can listen back to this.
It's just about trying to just learn about it because it connects us back to, you know, our tupuna, and it makes us more aware of like where we are. Because you know, when I go up north and you're like, wow, the stars are so different here, and even when you go to the west coast, it just feels, everything feels so much different because the way the sun moves across the sky, and just to notice those things is really important because that affects the land and the people and all of that.
I think at some point in your kōrero, I just got stuck on the image of the stars moving around us. And I was like, feel care. Like, it's such a It's a beautiful but buzzy concept, eh?
Yeah, the stars are still there even when the sun's up.
Right. Even if you live in Te Tau Ninui and you can't see the stars because of all the light pollution, they're still there.
Yeah.
Just turn off your lights.
That's what I really grapple with, Mediana, and I think once I crack that, and I think that's the ongoing mission, is to understand how we move as a planet and where we are on the the whenua and how the stars, or how we move within the galaxy, as opposed to stars rising and setting, which is the metaphoric way of understanding it. But, I'm always, when I was in China, I felt lost, because I looked up in the rangi and I didn't recognize any of the stars. The moon looked way different. I'm like, nah, this is what's going on here. So, it's imperative for us to try and get an understanding. You can feel way more grounded, I think, for myself when I know, there's Tautoru. It was there today, last night, and here it is, tonight. So.
Ai, ana.
Hau tō moimoia pāna ki āu mahi. What's your vision for mahi aute in Aotearoa?
I think my vision has always been to adorn the inside of whārenui, because being from up north and not having many whare that have our visual language, I do really long for it, and I think I would love to put aute on the walls. One of the reasons my visual language comes from tukutuku is because the subject matter of my mahi is about our whetū, and as Rangi Mātāmua says, tangotango and wainui, who are the parents of our whānau marama, they made a wharenui, and that wharenui was called Hui Te Rangi Ora, and the stars were the tukutuku panels. And that's why our tukutuku look like our stars, basically, or also reference our whetū. And so I would love for my aute to be on the inside of a wharenui, but also to be, on the stage of Te Matasini one day would be amazing. And people's hair, just as adornment, just as like little adornments, but to deck out a whole couple would be really cool.
I love that about our toi Māori, that the relationship with the materials is so intimate and respectful. You're not buying a canvas and painting on it. You're saying your karakia and you're cutting down a rākau for your whakairo, or you're harvesting the bark for your ote. And then what's the process after that? There's a beating process that is what eventually turns it into the paper, Ned. That looks really, like, physically quite hard.
Yeah, it is. You have to be quite strong, but it's not a violent beating. It's a methodical, very intentional beating where you're just focusing on spreading the fibres evenly. And the first beat is very physical, and stripping off the bark is quite physical, especially if you've got bigger, older trees. But then the second beading process, which is after you soak it in water and ferment it or ret it for 4 weeks or 3 weeks, and then beating that is another whole process that makes it kind of look totally different. So it's a real process of transformation from bark to cloth. And then there's harvesting all of your pigments, and that's about relationships and finding knowledge holders.
You must be an incredibly patient person. I think I am definitely not the type of person who could do what you do. Do you think, though, that through the process of learning your mahi toi, that the ote has taught you patience, or have you always been that way?
Definitely I've learnt about patience. You are very humbled. I mean, it's a very humbling process. You think you are good at something, and then you'll go to a plant and you just won't be able to do the thing that you thought you were good at. So it's always putting you in your place.
Can aute be used for kākahu, or is it a separate sort of thing?
Yeah, definitely. In Hawaii, they make these enormous, beautiful pa'u skirts for hula, and they're like pleated and they look really beautiful when they dance in it. In terms of what we used Ote for, I've read that we did use them for maro. So I'm pretty keen to make te kurua maro and mokoa maro for when he's doing his uhi. Maro. I think that they were used for undergarments.
Is that what maro is, like type of?
Oh, maro is a, the English word is, I don't like the English word, it's loincloth is the English word. So
that's what I thought. And now we get to imagine te kuru in a loincloth. Thank you so much.
So, yeah, you just wrap it around. It's wave. Yeah. Right. Maro is, right. They're cool.
It covers the important parts,
Miriam.
Yeah. Pai ake te ra kupu.
A lot of our brothers and sisters in the island still say o waka with maro.
Aye. Yeah. Aye. Anake.
Aye. Yeah. It's warm enough in those ways too, but you know.
Yeah, little old me from the South Island, I'm like, I'm going to get makarere.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Not many maro down there back in the day.
Cold.
Oh, well, tēnā koe, Nico. That's all we have time for today. So thank you. Tēnā koe, your kōrero, me wā mahi. Hei whakaraura I tēnei mahi tuku iho, arā te mahi aute. E mihi ana ki a koe.
Oh, tēnā koutou, e mihi ana ki a koutou.
Ka pai tō matariki.
Ai, ka pai tō koutou matariki.
Me koe hoki.
Karawe, after the break, Leonie, Miriana and I will have a brief kōrero about our plans for the Māori New Year. Kia mau tonu atu rā.
Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
No mai hoki mai. To round off our kōrero today, we're going to have a little chat about what we're up to recognise Matariki and the Hautapu. So, e hoa ma? What are you guys up to? What are some of the things you guys are leaving behind in the old year? I spoke to Matua Rereata Makiha, and he said that's one of the things they practice up in Te Tai Tokerau. They shut down the old year before they even look at opening up the new year.
Man.
And they let go of redundant things, and they put to sleep issues that, or projects or what things that didn't serve them or didn't work for them, which I think is a really cool whakaaro that we could incorporate. So,
do they like say that? Do they sort of wānanga those things together, or do they sort of, you know, give them up to the setting for two?
That's a good question. I'll be sure to ask them that for part two.
Just yell it into the void.
But I think both of them work. You can have an internal wānanga, but to sit around and have a group wānanga about what didn't work last year. I mean, there's probably better feedback in the ropu.
I'm letting go of feeling racist narratives. I'm letting go of that in my new year because they don't have anything to do with me, and I'm choosing to walk away from feeling any type of way about those kinds of people.
Ooh.
They don't belong in my owl anymore.
Main.
Cool. Not going to let them take free rent.
Aye, exactly. Kicking them out. I'm kicking them out.
Too much.
Yeah. Just noise. Zone it out.
Aye.
Not your raru. Not yours to carry and hold.
Yeah, because that's their goal, eh, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like anything, if you ignore it, it goes away. And I'm not saying that, you know, those narratives or people will go away necessarily, but they can go away from my world. I'm walking a different path now.
Ka pai koe.
Mickey.
It's interesting, eh, for me this year, because naturally, even though only in the last couple years have I come to understand about Matariki and the Mātauranga connected to it, I tend to make big life changes around this period anyway. Like last year, I left my partner at the time, left my job. Yeah, I did a lot of big changes. But this year, I'm quite settled and really feel like in the latter half of last year, I found the course that I was supposed to be on. And so really I'm kind of trying to pull a lot of that through into this year and just continue my reo haerenga, reclamation of my mātauranga a iwi, a hapū. And I mean, a small goal of mine to move into, you know, what I'm sending out to Hiwi I Te Rangi, the whetū of wishes and hia hia. I am learning to bake.
Nice.
It sounds real basic, but I want some practical skills.
And it's not basic. It's hard AF, man. It's a whole science.
I think it's quite good, though, to fuck a toe because I tend to be quite a rush, busy, frantic person. And, you know, this what I'm finding is the secret to good baking is follow the recipe to the T.
Right.
Don't take shortcuts. Yeah. Don't mess it around with it.
And you got to take your time with it.
Yeah, so.
Halfway.
Someone else has already gone through the effort of putting it all that work in to put it in a book.
Yeah.
What about you, Tukuru? What are you leaving behind from
wawata?
I think a big learning curve for me was learning how to say no. It's pretty cliche these days, especially on IG, but learning how to turn down mahi. As someone who's recently joined the world of freelancing, I had quite a steep learning curve. It's been about 12 months since I started freelancing, and I hit the ground running, saying yes to everything because I was kind of worried that, and I had been told by, you know, friends in the industry, well, when the mahi's on, you just got to take the mahi and you got to go for it. But I think it's much more nuanced than that. It's understanding time management and how to maintain energy, knowing what projects serve you as well as, you know, can help you pay the rent or whatever. So, I've written a list recently about like a checklist for myself so I can just be more aware of what the project might offer me and what I can offer the project before diving right into it, before I say yes. So, you know, I can sit down and have a good kōrero with people and just so that everyone's on the same page and really just trying to get better outcomes from mahi. And I feel like everyone can do that no matter what sort of line of work you're in. So that's really one thing I'm really trying to take into next year. And just hauora as well. Got knocked over by the flu last week, so I've been in bed for a few days and I haven't been this sick. It wasn't COVID.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting, but apparently it's going around the community. There's a few of my mates who have it as well, and it's knocked them over as well. So it's really just a good time for me to be like, okay, got to get back into training and just try and hopefully that goes, you know, that coincides with learning and participating in kura reo and things like that as well. I guess that holistic ao Māori dream is always something that I'm working towards in the background, and we get busy in our daily lives. But yeah. That's it for me.
Ka pai.
I like that these are questions that anyone from Aotearoa can use to help them understand Matariki, what this holiday is for. You know, it's easy enough to. The mātauranga is deep and wide, so it is not going to be easy for everyone to be able to understand which stars do what and how to, you know, read the tohu of the maramataka. Here I am, no. It is easy enough to understand that at the end of the new year, you can practice these things that are quite mindful, which is letting go of things, wishing for new things, farewelling loved ones that have passed. Like, I think these are really easy ways for New Zealanders to understand what Matariki's for, ne?
Yeah. And if I'm going to be honest, I need to use it for that as well. We've lost a few people in our whānau. We've had some big events. We had some unveilings, you know, so even though those people have already gone, Matariki is that time to sort of deal with that. If you're still carrying a lot of that mamai for people that have passed, it's a prime opportunity to engage in a hautapu. I've heard of people, you know, it doesn't have to be titi and kumara and your kete. I've heard of some whānau that have started off with marshmallows with a little fire at their local marae. Aye. And, you know, and then the next year they brought kai from the shop, and then the year after they had mara. So we got to take a long-term look. Like, this is going to be around forever.
Kapai.
We've got a few years to get, you know, to get into the groove of it. And I have big aspirations for what it will look like for my tamariki mokopuna. But yeah, using it as a way to deal with grief, I think, is probably going to be the most beneficial for us as whānau.
It's nice to hear you say, because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, because at the beginning of last year, going by the Gregorian calendar, we had a couple of big losses in our whānau too, and definitely still feeling that taumaha, but we're sort of like, well, how do I approach Matariki, you know, because You know, according to the Mātauranga, Pōtukawa has already taken them on. But it's, you know, it's nice to hear. I mean, I guess that was the kōrero of...
Rereata Mākiha.
You know, the kōrero being that it's just about releasing taumaha in general. And if you are still carrying that forward, you know, even if you have said goodbye to them, then it's a good time to deal with it. I definitely think that's something that, you know, I'm still carrying a lot of that mamai from those losses, and also been thinking a bit about how to give back to the environment, because, you know, this is a time to, you know, the whetū and the maramataka, you know, it's all about our connection to the taiao, right? And having lived in the city for like 9 years, about finally living back out in, you know, ahu whenua in the country, you know, there's a few like cleaning up of awa, cleaning up the beach, which I'm really keen to take part of, just to mihi. Mihi back to Papatūānuku and really, yeah, just give back essentially. Koina, ana. So I feel like that's a cool other way that people are looking to celebrate Matariki is, you know, go and do a tidy up, go and pick some rapihi up, you know. Kotahi holder, it doesn't have to be a long time, but that's a way you can give back, I reckon.
Yeah, tautoko. And I really hope that that's like an overarching theme that comes through for, especially for everyone listening, that for me, the purpose of this, the regeneration of Mātauranga Māori, is to help people understand a more holistic Māori worldview where we can exist sustainably within our environment. So what Miriana, what you're saying, Eho, is on point. If anything, this should encourage us to be more aware of our environment and our impact upon it and how we can tread lightly and just take care. Because as you know, we're in a crisis, climate crisis is upon us.
And I think especially here, because we've just grown up, the country has grown up with all of our big holidays being from a different country, a different climate, a different whenua. I can really hope that people actually understand that this public holiday is of this whenua, regardless of where you're from. If you live here, we finally get to celebrate something that's ours. It's not Easter or Christmas or any of these other imported holidays. And it's like how Nico was talking about how it helps you place yourself in time and space. This is the one holiday we've been given now that places us in this place, in this time. So you can, you know, look up at the sky and see exactly where you are. We don't live in England as much as some of our country people would like to think, but we don't. We just don't. We don't live in any other country but here under these whetū.
Kia ora.
Aye. I've been enjoying some of the kōrero online and debate about turning lights off. And, you know, there's been calls for the Pōneke, you know, because this is the rohe I'm part of, fireworks to be cut, which I think's actually, I support that. I think we have to actually, we can't just have a Māori holiday and bring these Pākehā ways of celebrating into it. But, you know, everyone loves their fireworks, so... for anyone who's listening, I don't want to. Yeah. I'm not going to be that guy like rallying against it, but personally, I'm like, oh, waiho, I don't think I'll go.
That's quite funny though, because there was heaps of rādu when the council decided to move those fireworks displays from New Year's to Matariki, and all the racists got mad because they were like, you're taking away all of our traditions.
The old Guy Fawkes, eh?
And yeah. I was just like, I don't know, have you ever heard of Christmas and birthdays and Easter, and it was a hilarious narrative to me, like, our old ways are dying. The old ways of fireworks.
Out with the old and in with the older.
Hey, pie.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think e hoa mā, we could go all night, but maybe we should leave it there for now. So tēnā kōrua, co-hosts, Leonie, Miriana, tēnā kōrua, your kōrua, whakaaro me o kōrua kōrero i te rāne.
Kia ore hoa. Ai,
ngā mihi e hoa.
Shout out to our podcast manager, Te Aihe Butler, doing overtime today. Big mihi to you, studio engineer Jacob Edmonds. You can catch us wherever you get your audio. We'll be back in another couple weeks with some post-Matariki debriefs.
Ai.
Noho rātura.
Nair is public interest journalism funded through New Zealand On Air and brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network. It was hosted and researched by Te Kuru Jews with Mediana Johnson and Leonie Hayden. Nair was produced by Te Aihe Butler with senior production from Jane Yee and project management from Mark Kelleher.
Kia ora e te iwi. Kia ora, Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.